first podcast of June. Two comics, three topics, 10 minutes each. The perfect podcast for your modern lifestyle. Later in the show, we are going to be talking about how the political landscape has affected comedy. We're also going to be talking about how the political landscape did affect comedy with a couple of comics who are now on their apology tour. But right now, I think the pressing topic at hand is that Donald Trump exited the Paris Accord. It couldn't have been, to delve into next segment's topic a little bit, it could not have been a better time for comics to dominate the news cycle, because Al Gore is on the road again. He's I've seen him in a couple of interviews, looking like he got eyebrow tattoos. Have you seen him?
No. I mean, I assume we'll be seeing him more because the movie's coming out.
Yeah, he got a couple chins removed and eyebrows tattooed on.
Ooh, I'm Googling this on my phone right now. Now I'm really curious. I haven't seen him since his so he went from sort of skinny it looked like an actuary or maybe like an undertaker's apprentice when he was younger. And then when he lost, he went into that like weird mountain man mode for a while. And I don't really and then he kind of cleaned up, he kind of like got a shaved and hosed off and came back. And so I haven't really seen him since he sort of came back from sort of the pudgy mountain man Jeremiah Johnson phase.
No, I saw him on with George Stephanopoulos yesterday, and he looked very well groomed. It looked like he's enlisted.
Oh, wow. Look at them eyebrows. They're pointy.
It looks like he enlisted the guy who made the human Ken doll. There's definitely been some work there. I don't know if that work was just done for the press tour or that he actually had that done for the movie. I don't know if that's the Al Gore we're going to see in the movie, but that is not Dr. Pudgy that we recognize from The Inconvenient Truth.
No, it looks like he dropped a little weight in general, and then those eyebrows just look sculpted. I think they might be just a little overly sculpted. Because you can do all kinds of crazy stuff with your eyebrows. Guys just don't know about it. Ask any woman and they'll tell you, man, you can go pretty extreme. You can do the weird – I always like the when the girls pluck them to the point where they're like two John Waters mustaches above their eyes, the little kind of like pencil thin.
I kind of like that. That was kind of a 90s look.
Yeah, it's like if you broke John Waters' mustache in half and then you put it over somebody's eyes.
Now the look is drawn on. It's almost like a Groucho Marx sort of look.
Sharpie.
That at first looks attractive, but when you look at it the second time, doesn't really look right. And then when you look at it the third time, it looks downright comical.
Mad Max villain-esque.
Pete Lee, a mutual friend of ours, a very funny comic, did a bit on when we did Crash and Burn a few years back. And he said that sometimes people look at him the way they look at someone with tattooed eyebrows. It's like, something weird is going on here. I'm not sure what it is. But back to Paris is, for me, my opinion, President Trump took us out of a bad deal. It's I think what people's problem with the Paris Accord exit is the same problem they had with his travel ban, is that even though it was not religiously selective in the travel ban, people assumed it would be because he promised it would be on the campaign trail.
Right. Well, and also keep in mind, initially it was religiously restrictive. In the first draft of it, they said Christians could come over, but Muslims can't.
Okay, but I don't want to get into that. But the second one, no, the second one.
You're right. They changed it. They had lawyers working on it. But he keeps. By the way, he tweeted again this morning. As his legal team argues, not a ban. He tweeted this morning. Oh, it's a ban, and I'm calling it a ban.
Oh my gosh. I would rather have him on the Twitter than on the red button. So let's just leave it there.
Boy, is that a low bar to clear, by the way. That's the thing about Trump. That's the thing I refuse to go along with. He has so thoroughly lowered people's expectations. You know, he's basically like the Wonder Woman movie in a lot of ways. The DC has lowered people's expectations so much. Whereas, like, if the movie just goes in a straight line and tells a story, everyone's like, "Oh, Oscars." And it was fine. I'm not bagging on the Wonder Woman movie, but like, I refuse to play this game where we hold somebody. If I was on a basketball team and one guy was so bad that he's always bad, I don't play him because he's slightly better than he was yesterday. I'm still going to hold him to the standards of everybody else on the team.
Sure.
You know?
Sure, that's fine. But back to the Paris Accord.
Why do you think you're saying that every country in the world is wrong?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, here was the gist of the Paris Accord. Okay, uh-huh. The gist of the Paris Accord was the United States is going to cut way back on its energy usage and give billions of dollars to other countries. Gee, I wonder how they got other countries to sign on to that. You know, it's to quote a popular libertarian chestnut. It's 195 wolves and one sheep trying to decide what to have for dinner. Of course all the other countries thought it was a good idea. It was going to be advantageous.
So then why is China volunteering to step into our role now?
Because they're looking for a PR move. China is not going to stop burning coal. They may stop burning it in the cities where the smog is a severe problem, but they're not going to stop using coal. India already said, as part of their agreement, part of their membership in the Paris Agreement, they said that they're going to double their coal production over the next 20 years. So why is the U.S. going to be, you know, why are we volunteering to handicap ourselves and give billions of dollars into a $100 billion fund that's going to be distributed against the developing nations? How does that help the climate by giving money to other countries? I tried to muddle through the Paris Accord because somebody actually challenged me. They said, "Have you even read it?" And I thought, "Oh yeah, you're right, I haven't." So I tried to muddle through it, and most of it is the redistributionist policy. There's really not a lot of. It's pretty much, to summarize it, is rich countries are going to give poor countries $100 billion, and we're all going to try to agree to cut back a little. That's it. And even the goal stated in the policy is under 2 degrees Celsius by the year 2100. So okay, let's see.
That is misstating. You're already popular misstating the science. Just read an article about this. Trump misstated the science. Everybody's getting this from Trump misstating the science in the thing.
No. I am quoting directly from the Paris Accord, Brian. 2 degrees. They were going to try to keep the temperature from rising below 2 degrees Celsius by the year 2100. That's directly from there. I'm not quoting Trump. I'm quoting the Paris Accord.
They might
try to work to get the temperature rise below 1.5 degrees Celsius.
I wish I had this article up. But I just read it. The guy who did the study said that it's not that. It's about capping the rise, and so it's actually more of like 5 degrees, but we're trying to keep it from only rising 1 to 2 degrees but because the rate we're at right now would actually go 5 or 6. So the 2 degrees is a bit of a canard, first off, because it's actually more. The problem is that it could go up way more than that, so we're trying to cap it a little bit less. Also, people talk about 1, 2, 3 degrees Celsius like it's no big deal. That's a huge deal. It's not – it sounds easy. Oh, well, it's 3 degrees warmer outside. But this is not 3 degrees warmer outside. This is the effects of 3 degrees on average cumulatively has a massive effect, more than just like, oh, it's 1 degree warmer.
No, but that's within normal variability of the climate. But regardless that they didn't even say that that's what they didn't even, that's not even a mandate. It was just a suggestion. The mandate is the $100 billion. The mandate, which over 80 years comes to $8 trillion. So we're going to spend mandated $8 trillion spent, and it's only going to raise 2 degrees rather than 5 degrees. That doesn't sound like a deal to me, but it does sound like the end of the segment.
We have the same mother that makes us blood brothers. This world is our mother. You are my blood brother. We're lucky to be.
And we're back on the rule of three. In a little bit, we are going to be talking about how politics has been affecting comedy. And as you can see from the first segment, negatively, not a lot of funny in the first segment. But right now, we're going to be talking about also politics and comedy, I would guess, is the big stories of the week. Of course, the first story was Kathy Griffin appearing with a mock bloody head of President Trump. And I'm guessing that was a publicity shot for her a Vegas tour, which was supposed to open on June 1st. She had 2 weeks at the Mirage starting on June 1st. I'm guessing that's what she took that picture for and released it.
Absolutely. And you know it was a Craven political stunt. And it just bugs me that it's just like, it's clearly going to not help the discourse in any capacity. All it's going to do is give one side a reason to have disingenuous outrage. And then the other side, it's going to either force people to be apologists. I got 3 calls from news stations asking me if I would like to comment on it.
Wow.
No. Guess who didn't vote for Kathy Griffin for president of comedy? Not a fan. But you know that she's full of it because it was 2 pictures she released. One was that one, and the other was her in a black bikini, like a glamour shot. Like, oh, in your big political statement, you included a glamour shot. Now she is a craven attention hound.
That kind of sums up Kathy Griffin right there, doesn't it?
Yep. I think she was surprised at the intensity of the backlash, but that to me is just like, oh, so you handled snakes and then you got bit and now you're upset that you got bit by the snake? Yeah.
Well, it's essentially, here's the thing is Kathy Griffin lives in the blue bubble. She is at the center of the blue bubble. I highly doubt that Kathy Griffin knows anybody that would be offended by that picture. In fact, I don't think she knows anyone that would be that wouldn't applaud her for that picture.
I don't know, man. I'm a lefty pretty through and through. And I was offended by that picture not on behalf of Donald Trump, but on behalf of Daniel Pearl, an actual American who'd been beheaded and had that image foisted about as propaganda.
Yeah, that's a fair point. I'm not going to belabor that. But I'm talking about the sentiment, not the actual picture. Yeah, it was, you know, if you're going to do something like that to promote comedy, it should have been a cartoonish mask.
Absolutely.
It's like almost something from Itchy and Scratchy, mm-hmm. you know, with the eyes X'd out and the tongue to one side of the mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And,
I agree.
And skip the dripping blood. It was a highly disturbing picture. It reminded me, of course, when I first saw it, it reminded me of the Game of Thrones. George Bush is putting George Bush's head on a spike.
Right.
I don't know if you.
I remember that. But I mean, in fairness, I mean, that was one of those things where like you had to, you had to really be looking for that one. That was like a subtle deal, which also alleged.
Actually, I believe I saw it. I could be wrong, but I believe I said, oh, my God, that looks like George Bush. I believe I saw it.
But it wasn't, it wasn't like they zoomed in on it and made a big point of it.
No. And, you know, in a Game of Thrones, episode, it's just kind of part of the landscape.
Literally.
Yeah. It isn't really shocking, but yeah. But on a stark white background in a pretty blue dress, it really just looked out of place. And it didn't even look like a head. It looked like, because I'm guessing it wasn't. I'm guessing it was just a mask.
Probably, yeah.
It kind of like looked more like his face was peeled off.
Sure, sure. Well, my thought on this is that everybody's wrong. Because I don't think anybody should be defending Kathy Griffin, because it's not defensible. It's stupid. It was dumb. It's a thoughtless thing that has nothing but hurt the discourse at the expense for the only thing, the only person who stood to benefit in any capacity from that, in theory, was her, Kathy Griffin, by getting a publicity bump. And honestly, it probably will work out for her.
Maybe in the long run.
In the long run, I think it will. Because I mean, here's the thing. She was already screaming toward irrelevance at all points in time anyway. And so anything she can do to keep her name in the paper for another half a second is good. On the other side, anybody who voted for Trump, you don't get to be offended. You don't. Nobody vote. Not I don't mean you, but anyone who voted for a guy who mocked a handicapped guy to his face in front of a room full of people and who said all the stuff he did. Anybody. The only way you could possibly vote for Trump is to basically claim to be unoffendable.
What offended me by it was not the actual image. It was not the actual statement behind it. And as a matter of fact, I actually support that. I'm a big freedom of speech guy.
Yeah, yeah, no, consistently.
I've done a few things in my career that I probably shouldn't have suffered consequences. I wouldn't have apologized. I couldn't have apologized like her because I don't wear makeup. That's what cracked me up was the first apology. You know, she was serious because she'd made it without her makeup,
which is such a calculated sort of semiotic decision, you know.
Oh my God, when I noticed that, yeah, I can't remember who it was, but a girl told me, she said, oh yeah, that's if you have to, like, when you're going to work, if you called in sick and the boss is suspecting that you pulled something on him, mm-hmm. you go in the next day without your makeup. And the
right
away, it's like, oh my God, you look, yeah, she told me that. That's a little girl thing. That the girls all know about. So yeah, when she did it without the makeup, it's like, okay, calculated.
Yep, I'm just some homely, humble gal.
Right. And then number two, mm-hmm. Lawyered up and claiming victim.
Oh yeah, that was ridiculous.
All that's left now in the toolbox of standard responses is checking herself into rehab.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That's, yeah. Or just becoming a Scientologist and just subvert the whole thing. So real quick, before we run out of time, and then also the other big political scandal comedic political scandal is old Bill Maher's in trouble for dropping the N-word in a joke during an interview with Ben Sasse.
Well, originally when I heard about that, mm-hmm. what I thought was this is the classic Robin pretending he has a broken wing to get you away from the nest trick. Mm-hmm. It's when I first heard about it, I said, I'll bet you Bill Maher did that on purpose to distract the news cycle over to him. But then I saw that was my first impression. But then I actually saw the clip, mm-hmm. and I said, no, that's just another example of liberal entitlement. And I've run into this before. Stephen Colbert, actually, with his Ching Chong Chinaman routine. Is that a lot of people on the left feel that because they're left, that they also that they're entitled to use the language that other people are forbidden?
I agree with you on the whole. I disagree with the Colbert one because I disagree with the Colbert one because he was making fun of somebody else's the context of that. When you saw the whole clip, I had no problem with that at all. But the Bill Maher thing, I agree. But I think Bill Maher has I think Bill Maher's Quentin Tarantino syndrome, which is that he feels like because he hangs out with three or four black people that like he's like in the club.
Yeah.
You know, he's like, well, I smoke weed. I hang out with black people. I can say this. No, you can't.
But I also kind of think that when he said that, he was doing exactly what Colbert did with the Chinaman thing, is that he was Ben Sasse. Is that right? Is that who he was talking to? Yeah, is that he felt that he was speaking like a Ben Sasse supporter. Okay.
No, I don't. I think honestly, I think it was just a really dumb joke made by a guy who could have gotten away with that 25 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, I think he's a little he's a little behind the times in that way, you know? And I think it's one of those things where I'm not saying he should be excused for this, but I think in 9 out of 10 interviews with Ben Sasse, he does not make that joke. If he thinks about it for one extra second, I don't think he makes that joke. But I think it was just an ill-timed joke, but I do think it was really, really dumb. But the flip side, here's the hypocrisy watch on that one that drives me crazy. So Huffington Post couldn't be more enthused to, oh, Bill Maher shame. There were like 8 Bill Maher shaming articles up. Stupid Huffington Post has been using Bill Maher as a source of free content and pimping his show so hard for so long. You can literally watch the entire real-time broken up into clips on the Huffington Post every week. They use him for headlines. It's been symbiotic relationship ever since Ariana was running it. And they just turn on a dime and act like they haven't been promoting that stuff. It's just craven.
And speaking of turning on a dime.
Nice. And on the final segment of Rule of Three, speaking of Huffington Post from the last from the last segment, I was just smack talking them, but there was an article at Huffington Post.
You spend more time reading Huffington Post than I do because I was not aware of the Bill Maher saturation.
You know what's funny? And here's my because I truly do hate Huffington Post. I do it because I do 50 monologue jokes a week. And the way they have their headlines organized, and especially in their lifestyle section, they have a lot of those like Gwyneth Paltrow life. It's really stupid, but it's perfect for monologue joke writing.
Oh no! No, those are sources like that are irreplaceable.
Yeah, because the news is so heavy of late. Like I went to write my monologue jokes this week, and it's like Paris Climate Accords. Okay, I can get a couple of things, but then you start going to like. You know, London bombing and just like, oh, God, I don't want to write about this.
Throats slashed.
That's, yes. I don't want to, you know, you can't do it. So
that's,
when I.
That's
when
where I blinked out on the monologue joke writing the past couple days. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I dip over to Huffington Post, particularly because they have some especially stupid, fluffy sections. But as a consequence, I feel like I'm the world's number one Huffington Post hater because I go there a lot, even though I hate it so much. But they had an article that didn't, you know, the article's not great, but I do think there's something to it, talking about the difficulty that political TV shows are having in our current, I would say, I don't know, over-politicized era. I mean, you could call it the Trump era, which is it is, but also just the – I think the fact that the campaign felt like – well, it was 2 years long and it still feels like it hasn't stopped, I think is a big part of it.
Yeah. It's I think what it is I think the 2018 campaign has started already.
Absolutely.
And that's why you sense that is the 2018 campaign started before the inauguration.
I think it started the day after the election, probably, or maybe 2 days after, you know. And Trump never stopped campaigning. He's still holding campaign rallies. Yeah. He held a campaign rally a month after he was inaugurated.
Yeah, no, it's basically he's trying to keep his, you know, his faction enthused in spite of the barrage that they're facing from all sides, justifiably or not justifiably. I'm not going to make a comment on that. But for me, I did a political series at Zanies last year.
Mm-hmm.
It was an idea that I came up with way back in 2015. I said, you know, 2016, it's election year. It's once a month. I'll do a showcase of nothing but political comics. And it started out January 2016, and we ran it actually past the election. We did a recap the week before Thanksgiving. But I had comics from all over Chicago, all over the political spectrum. Come in and do short sets, focusing entirely on politics, and it started really good. It was really positive. We had differing opinions, and as the political landscape started to tilt, it got really it was really, really difficult. It just to keep doing material that's that's fresh and funny and don't rely on you know just hack you know go to toupee jokes or
yeah or saying you know, something or that's going to get an jokes. Applause break from someone who agrees with you basically.
Yeah, it was more and more difficult as the year went on. There was nothing you could write that was funnier than what was actually happening in the campaign. And we did the first debate between Hillary and Trump. We did a we actually live riffed the debate, and got a huge turnout for that. Didn't really. Show probably didn't go as well as it could have, but we got a lot of attention. So what's that matter, huh?
Sure, you got on TV. I remember that.
paid admission. That's all that's important.
Sure, the club was pretty happy too with the free TV spot. You know.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Absolutely. But the problem was after the election, nobody seemed to have an appetite for anything political anymore, and it's. It amazes me, and it was covered in the Huffington Post. It amazes me that that Colbert is picking up the popularity there.
Yeah,
that it would seem to me the same fatigue that's being experienced elsewhere. In the article you mentioned, they talk about shows like Scandal and House of Cards, and that there's really no appetite for. People don't want to look under the skirt anymore. Right. Whereas before, it was a little bit of purient interest, you know, to watch Veep and say, "Oh, this is what really happens backstage," and that's kind of funny, but it's not funny anymore.
Well, I have a theory actually about that, about why Colbert is doing so well, and I think in a weird way, it actually helps explain. The inverse effect of people being disinterested, which is because of this climate, the majority of people, I would say, are put off. And it's like, oh, God, I just don't want to hear it. And I think one thing that it's hard to do jokes about Donald Trump. And there was, you know, you sent me an article about stand-up comedy in the age of Trump that was really interesting from Esquire GQ. And it is, I feel that thing where even you just, if you say, I try not to say the T word in my act. I have one joke where I say it. It's very carefully deployed and it does well and I'm happy with it. But if I try to not even say his name, just because like, agree or disagree, people just, you just feel that.
Yeah, exhaustion.
Shrug.
Just exhaustion.
Right. But I think what exacerbates that is, so I'm making these numbers up, but if let's say that's 60 to 70% of the people. I would say there's like 30 to 40% of the people or whatever who can't stop thinking about it and don't want to stop thinking about it and obsess over it. And so Colbert is getting the benefit of the people who can't stop obsessing over it, all flooding to him, right? They're all going that way.
That's a good point.
Those other people that are obsessive about it are making the rest of us 60% even more exhausted. So it's like a self-fulfilling cycle where they get more obsessive and we get more exhausted in like equal measures.
No, that's a good point. It's in today's splintered television viewing audience. It doesn't, you know, it's like books. I think it's 40,000 books will get you on the New York Times bestseller list.
Yeah.
That's all it takes.
50 CDs will get you on the top of iTunes stand-up comedy list. I mean, you don't have to sell that many albums.
Really?
I don't know if it's 50, but it's a pretty low number. But yeah, fragmented audiences and stuff. Absolutely. And it's funny that like it's from a TV viewer's perspective, from the Colbert people's perspective. I mean, obviously he's definitely courting the left, without a doubt. But I guarantee you there's a decent percentage of people that hate watch Colbert.
Well, and I think what happened, I think it took, Donald Trump is what took the old Daily Show audience.
Mm-hmm.
It took Donald Trump to get them to figure out how to hook an antenna up to their TV. It's because when Colbert originally left, they said, I can watch other stuff. and the cord cutters, who was were probably a big segment of the Colbert demographic, they actually, when he went to network, they didn't bother following him. But now that Trump's in office, yeah, it's almost like a getting short wave during World War II. The only way we're going to find out what's happening over there is if we string an antenna to the house.
Well, yeah, I think from the TV programmer's perspective, it's like their demographics they're looking at aren't even so much Democrat or Republican or conservative and liberal. It's more of like, we're just courting people who aren't sick of it. We don't really care why you're not sick of it or in what way or how that's employed. You know, just as long as you're not sick of it, you come over to here. Because I think Colbert has definitely made the decision of like, well, I'm just going to do a pretty political show. Just sort of political focus, where then, you know, I mean, Fallon is like the opposite of that in so many ways. It seems like, let's pretend that nothing's happening outside and play Twister with Britney Spears.
Yeah, it's almost like Jay Leno's hip grandson.
Uh huh. Yeah, and I'm not even bagging on that necessarily. I mean,
no, there's a reason why it's called broadcasting. There is, in Jimmy Fallon, Jay Leno, we're both broadcasters. But can broadcasting exist in today's television market?
Yeah, niche casting is the new thing, it seems like, almost, right? Podcasts and all that. But I do, yeah, I don't, I do. It's funny, the Huffington Post article that I read was unconvincing in certain points, but I do think they're onto something, because I was watching Designated Survivor and I was kind of enjoying that, and then at a certain point it just I never actually watched the finale of South Park because they went so far in with the Trump stuff that I was just like, it aired the week after the election, and I was like no. I don't want to see this. And then now enough time's gone by, I'm like, man, I don't really care now. I didn't really remember what was going on.
Huh.
And not that I'll never watch South Park again, but I'll probably never watch that episode.
In the article you referenced, though, they mentioned the Americans, and I think I have to mention this, is they said, the interest has fallen off of the Americans. And it's like, well, A, the Americans is talking about 80s politics. which does not resemble today's politics in any fashion. Trust me, I was there. But I think what's the trouble is with the Americans is it's just getting boring.
I got bored with it. I was like, wait, they're not going to ever change that, and they're just going to try to keep the same secret for the whole show? I'm out.
I've kind of had a hard time keeping up my interest in it, and I think any show that lasts six seasons, keeping it fresh, it's difficult, you know. Which is Scandal's in the seventh season now? Is that what?
Yeah,
what I
you
saw?
Could just start. I mean, that's why I said the article wasn't so convincing to me, even though I think the sentiment is actually very correct. But to some degree, they were gilding the lily, or padding the stats a little bit by being like, yeah, people don't like 60 Minutes as much as they used to. Yeah, well, I don't know that has anything to do. Speaking of keeping it fresh, that's why we keep all the segments limited to 10 minutes. So before we go, I just want to remind people before we go to please comment on iTunes. I don't think people don't always know how important those comments are, but that's what helps push you toward the top of the rankings and get new listeners. So leave a comment.
Well, not even that. We want to know what you think of the show, what we need to do, what we don't need to do, what you like, what you don't like. Please help make this your show. And if you haven't figured out already, you can find more information about me at timslegel.com. Episodes are there.
Yep. And at brianmillercomedy.com, and see me on Twitter at realbrianmiller with a Y.
See you all next week.
See you next week.